Coming up on this episode of the Starlight Pit Podcast, Alex Ryback from the Scum and Villainy Radio Podcast joins us to give us a review of the upcoming book from John Jackson Miller, A New Dawn. We also chat episode 7, Rebels, the Inquisitor in this episode's Things That Make You Go, and Vintage Kenner Collecting in our discussion segment. All that and more in this episode of the Starlight Pit Podcast, and it starts right now.
Just got to the Sarlacc pit.
And the powerful Pleiades.
The almighty Sarlacc.
Binds the galaxy together.
All powerful Sarlacc.
Its energy surrounds us and binds us.
Welcome to the Sarlacc Pit, official podcast of GalacticBinder.com and Yodasnews.com, the fans podcast. So grab your lightsabers and join your hosts, Matt Cranky and Chris Hoffice Planet, for this round of discussions.
Welcome back, Star Wars fans, to the Sarlacc Pit Podcast, the podcast to help you digest everything in the Star Wars universe. The Sarlacc Pit is brought to you by GalacticBinder.com and Yodasnews.com, and we thank those guys for their support of the podcast. This is episode number 76 for August 31st, 2014. My name is Matt, your co-host for the show. And let me bring in your co-host and creator all the way from Memphis, Tennessee. It's Chris Hoth, Ice Planet Smith. What's up, my friend? How you doing?
What's going on? I'm doing good. Doing good.
Hey, we got a lot of stuff to talk about today. We got a fun show. We're going to be talking some news, some rumors, Rebels. And we'll be digging into some of the vintage figure collecting a little later in the show. But before we do that, you know, we were going to have actually a guest. We were going to have Alex Ryback, formerly from the Scum and Villainy podcast. He could be showing up today. We'll add him in as soon as he comes on. He got busy, but as soon as he can come on, we will add him into the show. But like I said, Chris, before we get into all those topics, we got to talk about some news, so let's news and rumors and whatever else. So let's do that now. And what's going on in the news lately, Chris? I think the first thing that let's talk about some episode 7 stuff. Not a ton of stuff going on, but episode 7 has resumed filming, and Harrison Ford is back. In fact, it was funny, I just saw him today. He was doing like the ice bucket challenge thing that's going crazy lately. He actually did one of those, and he was standing up, and it didn't even look like anything. You know, this guy had a broken leg, and at least that's what they said, right? I don't know if it was really a broken leg. I mean, because he healed fairly quick, and he's already walking around, and he's doing all that stuff. But he's back. There's talk of him being at the Michael Skellig Island shoot. But in any event, Chris, he's back, and filming has resumed. So we'll see what happens then. Also, and this was one of the bigger things for me, Chris, was they posted a picture of what could be a stormtrooper helmet from episode 7. And I was like totally blown away by this thing. I'm sure everybody that's listening to this, you've seen this now already. It just looked so cool. I mean, if you would have said, hey, we're doing episode 7, we're going to have stormtroopers in it, you got to make these stormtrooper helmets look like something you would see in episode 7, you know, something you'd see 30 years or whatever into the future. And this is what exactly I think would come up. I mean, it has a sleek design. The eyes and everything kind of molds into the mouth. I mean, and here's the thing about this thing. Check this out. Somebody did some kind of iOS crazy location service thing with this picture, right, Chris?
Yeah.
And apparently this thing was taken at Pinewood Studios. Now, can that be faked? I don't know. I mean, maybe it can. Who knows? But any, I'm sure anything can be fake, right? Mm-hmm. But I mean, it just lends a little bit of credence to that this stormtrooper thing is for real. So what do you think about this helmet? I mean, what do you think of the design? You saw it, of course.
Yeah,
right?
I saw like two versions of the same design, and I'm like, okay, it looks really, really cool. I'm like, it does look like a really, really advanced version of a stormtrooper.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know, I'm looking at it. I'm like, I like it. But then I'm kind of like, oh, my gosh, it's something new. But it's just, you know, stormtrooper here. Okay, come on. But that just shows you how crazy Star Wars fans are. They're reporting that shooting has resumed. Okay. Mm-hmm. Wow. And then the stormtrooper and the people are going so far as to trace the picture to see where it came from to make sure it's real. That's right. Just like Star Wars fanatics. But I don't know. It looks really cool. I'm anxious to see, is that going to be the main stormtrooper? Is that just going to be another version of a stormtrooper or something?
Oh,
you
yeah,
know,
yeah.
You know, we'll have to wait and see. But I think it looks really sharp.
Yeah, it does. I mean, it's just a super clean. It just, like, aesthetically, it looks like something from the future. And, or, you know, as the Star Wars universe is, it looks like it's that progression. Yeah, it looks really cool. Just the whole design and, wow. It looks like it's of one helmet, but there's look like there's multiple helmets behind it. So,
yeah,
you never know. I mean, and this brings up a whole new thing of like, oh, okay. So the stormtroopers are still around in Episode 7, you know, they're still factor into this universe somehow, which kind of makes, I don't know. I guess that makes sense. I mean, of course, the Empire was destroyed, but you know, I'm sure there was plenty of these stormtroopers running around the galaxy. So who knows how this is going to factor in? I mean, it just opens up so many possibilities of where this movie can go, and it's so fun to think and speculate. So that is one of the big things that I saw that came out recently as far as Episode 7. Not a lot of stuff going on. I mean, like I said, the filming is taking place again, so I'm sure within the next month or so, we'll be getting more tidbits of maybe we'll get some kind of more leaked photos, you know, from somebody or whatever. But as of right now, that's kind of what's going on. I think that stormtrooper thing was the biggest thing to come out recently.
Mm-hmm.
Other news, Chris, Star Wars Rebels. A lot of stuff, of course. I mean, this is the flagship thing that's going on right now. This is what's propelling Marvel and Lucasfilm and Disney into Disney, not Marvel, but Disney into the realm of Star Wars is Rebels. This is the thing that's kicking it off, and they're really pushing it big time. And the latest issue of Star Wars Insider, number 152, is dedicated to Rebels and a bunch of stuff. And they've actually given us titles and directors and writers for not only the shorts that we've been seeing come out real recently, but the first, I think, four episodes or three episodes of the series. They gave us some information. So starting with the short The Machine and the Ghost, which was directed by Dave Filoni and written by Weissman, we've seen that one, Chris. That's with it's a great clip. It's with Kanan and Chopper and
Hera.
They're in the and Hera, yeah, in the Ghost, and they're fighting off some TIE fighters. You saw this one, right?
Oh yeah.
Just a great clip. It's got some great comedy in it, and the interaction, the chemistry between Hera and Kanan is there. You can feel it. And who knows? It almost seemed like there was some type of romance, maybe.
Yes.
Who knows? We'll see.
At the end of it, you kind of see this, like, there's something going on between them two. They have some kind of a relationship. And if you haven't seen these, you can go to YouTube and look under the Star Wars channel. They're, you know, StarWars.com channel, and you can see all of these. Now, they've done three so far. We're supposed to get another one tomorrow. And these aren't from the series. These are bonus material that they've done.
Okay. I'm glad you said that, because I was kind of confused on what's going on here with these. So this is just...
Yeah, these are just bonus material. And this first one, The Machine and the Ghost, was really, really good. It basically, they took the gunport sequence in Star Wars when they escape the Death Star and put it to Star Wars Rebels, and it looks fantastic. And it, you know, with it being bonus material, it kind of just got me a little more excited, because I'm like, okay, this is what the show is going to be like, the feel of it and everything. And Of the three that they've shown, this was my favorite, obviously. Yeah, right. This one was fantastic. And then they moved into one called Art Attack that has just really shows Sabine and what her character's about and what she's like. And she's running around a outpost of the Imperial Army or whatever. You know, she's spray painting on a TIE fighter and running around making fun of stormtroopers. And to me, I didn't really like this one that much. It was okay.
It was okay, to me,
it just seemed real childish. But I understand, to me, it's like they were just focusing on showcasing Sabine and what her character was like, and which is kind of what I'm assuming, because we got Hera and Kanan and Chopper in the first one, and in this one it was nothing but Sabine and stormtroopers. And then we get to the third one called Entanglement, which was nothing but Zeb and stormtroopers. This one I liked a little better.
I did too, yeah.
I thought this one was, it's really cool, and it also, I had picked up, if anybody hasn't picked it up, or if you'd like to pick it up, a new book that was just released called Star Wars Rebels, A Visual Guide. And this book shows you basically everything you need to know coming up for the Star Wars Rebels series. You get the backstories, some short backstory on all of the characters, from both sides of the action. And, one thing that I thought was really cool is they go in and look, and they show all of Ralph McQuarrie's influences in the series. And Zeb was strictly taken from the concept of Chewbacca.
His
original concept, what his design is. I mean, you look at it, and it looks just like him. And I like Zeb. He's just like this big, burly guy that just loves to beat up stormtroopers. And it was kind of funny in there. He said, Kanan's talking to him on his little hand mic. And he said, "Are you embarrassing the stormtroopers again?" And he said, "Well, you know, yeah, it's kind of hard not to." So, you know, I like it. I thought it was fun.
I loved it, too. You know, I thought exactly that. I came away with the comedy portion of it was it just worked. I mean, this thing it's witty, and it just that background where Kanan is talking to him through the comm, and he's hearing everything that's going on, and Zeb's trying to play it off like it's no big deal. But, and you've seen this throughout, like a lot of these clips that I've seen, it's just the comedy and all that is just really working for me. It just takes me back. I think they're doing it really good. Did you see the, Property of Ezra Bridger one? The last one?
I saw one that shows, the whole gang. Where they come on and Zeb's supposed to be a Wookiee.
Yeah, that's actually, I wanted to feature that too. That was one of the ones that really, I just loved it. And actually, it's actually a sneak peek that just came out recently. And let's take a listen to the sneak peek from Star Wars.
We have a new mission. Visago acquired the flight plan for an Imperial transport ship full of Wookiee prisoners.
Most of these Wookiees were soldiers for the Old Republic.
I owe those hairy beasts. They saved some of my people.
Mine too.
If we're going to save them, we've got a tight window. They've been taken to an unknown slave labor camp. If we don't intercept this ship, we'll never find them. Now, I have a plan.
Imperial Transport 651, this is Starbird, coming inbound.
State your business.
Bounty, we captured an additional Wookiee prisoner and have transfer orders to place him with you.
We have no such orders.
That's fine. We already got paid by Governor Tarkin. If you don't want the oversized Monong, I'll jettison here. Let you explain to your superiors why the Empire has one less slave.
That thing's not a Wookiee.
Haven't you ever seen a rare hairless Wookiee before?
Oh, forget it. Told you they wouldn't buy it.
You didn't exactly give them a chance to buy it.
Yeah, it's just something about the feel of their helmets on my fist.
Okay, you know the plan. Move out.
No troopers. Security's soft.
Spectre 1, come in. Spectre 4? Spectre 5? Ah, calms down. No, not down. Jammed.
Something's coming.
Star Wars Rebels.
Like I said, this this Zeb character, one of my friends actually saw the whole first two episodes, you know, the movie. Mm-hmm. It wasn't quite finished yet, but they saw it, and a lot of people have seen it now. It's been at a couple of the conventions, but he said that Zeb kind of turned out to be his favorite from the series so far. I think this guy is going to be one of those that just almost like a Chewbacca, where he's going to be a fan favorite. And look at what he's doing here. I mean, this is where I talk about the comedy, and it worked for me. Like, he was trying to do a Wookiee rally, and he said, "Oh, just forget it," and he just knocks him out. You know, this is like some of the classic, you know, comedy that we've got from the original trilogy that kind of was so fun from Chewbacca and stuff like that. How he was so tough, but sometimes he'd be kind of a wussy. And as Zeb is not, I'm not saying he's a wuss or anything like that. It's just the comedy kind of is working for me. So this is the clip I think you were just talking about, right, Chris?
Yeah. Yeah. I like the fact that basically this is Chewbacca talking. You know, mm-hmm. We always wondered sometimes what exactly Chewie was saying in some of these scenes. But now with this character, we get to, you know what he's thinking. So to me, it's kind of like this is a Chewbacca character. And mm-hmm. I mean, I really like him. And I like all the characters so far. Sabine, I thought was going to be one of my favorites. But right now, she's kind of my least favorite. I don't know. I got to wait and see.
Right.
In the episode, I liked what I saw in that 7-minute clip from her. I liked what I saw with Hera. I thought she was really cool in the machine and the ghost. And Chopper was really funny. And the comedy with Chopper in that particular episode was really good. So, you know, it says in the book and what we've seen in the behind the scenes look at it is he's just an eccentric droid that is grumpy and he speaks his mind, which is awesome. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like, and I was kind of surprised that he was drawn straight from the concept of R2-D2 as well, the right. early concept of him. And one thing that I did when I was looking at the book, Star Wars Rebels, The Visual Guide, I was reading through it, and it does answer one of the questions that we wondered about. Originally, years and years ago, I had a magazine back in like 78, 79, and it gave all the information on the stormtroopers. It just basically said that they were recruits, just like, you know, our armed forces or whatever, people that would sign up, that sort of thing, is basically what it said it was. But since we got the prequel trilogies and we're going with these clones, we don't know exactly what happens. We discussed this, we kind of wondered, so are the stormtroopers still clones? Mm-hmm. But according into this book, they're not. Stormtroopers right. are, it says in there, are now people that are just regular citizens
just
that
recruits,
go,
huh?
yeah, that yeah. go to Imperial camps or whatever and learn to be mm-hmm. the officers. So
right.
I'm assuming it doesn't really say that the clones are non-existent or anything. So basically, I think we just kind of, we move into the next phase where they're not building more clones. They're not creating more clones. They're just moving mm-hmm. forward with normal citizens to fill their ranks. So that's going to be interesting, and I'm sure that it'll come up at some point.
Yeah. You're talking about, you know, just some of the characters and from these shorts and everything we've seen so far. And just like everything ties in, like the music that's
yes.
infused with all the classic stuff. I'm loving that. Like you said, some of the shots come directly from, it seems like, Star Wars and some of the original animatics. They're doing that, the targeting stuff. And I remember seeing that and going, wow, it's just right out of Star Wars. And then, this connection that we're going to get from Ezra and Kanan and this force connection. One of the clips you saw them, you know, Ezra looks over and he sees Kanan and the music starts to swell of like the force theme, and like, whoa, mm-hmm. you know, obviously he's sensing something in the force, and he doesn't even know that yet. He doesn't know what he's doing or why he's having these weird, you know, spidey sense type of things, you know?
Exactly.
So it's going to be interesting to see him learning about the force and getting trained, sounds like, from Kanan and the camaraderie that these two are going to have. So that's going to be cool to see that blossom. And
yeah.
So you were saying,
I was going to say another thing with Kanan is, in this book, it says that Kanan was 14 years old mm-hmm. when Order 66 happened. He survived Order 66 mm-hmm. and that he got Obi-Wan's message to not to return and to go into hiding. So he went into hiding, mm-hmm. and it says his past is a mystery. We just basically know that he survived Order 66. He was 14 years old when it happened, and now he's at this point. So he's still a Jedi, but he's a closet Jedi. And
right.
that he's still trying to come to terms with his past. So that's something that we'll get to find out as the show goes along. And I think it all starts, obviously, it's going to start coming to head when he meets Ezra and his force. You know, like you said, Ezra doesn't know that that's the force he's dealing with. You know, he just thought he was like one of a kind special in that sense.
Mm-hmm.
So that's going to be, I think, very interesting to see how those two move forward with each other.
Yeah, definitely. So we got the shorts 101 A through D, and then we have the movie, which is going to be premiering on Disney Channel, which is episodes 102 and 103, and they're going to be shown as a one-hour block called Spark of Rebellion, which is directed by Stuart Lee and Stephen Lee and written by Simon Kinberg himself. And the Lees, well, at least Stuart Lee, he's directed many episodes of The Clone Wars. And I think this is Steven, I think his brother, this is his first foray into directing. So those brothers directed the movie portion of it. And then we have the first three of the series, which is 104, 105, and 106. And they have actual episode titles, Droids in Distress, Fighter Flight, and The Rise of the Old Masters, which sounds really compelling. Stuart Lee is directing 104 and 106, and his brother is doing 105, and these are all, the first two are written by Greg Weissman, and the third one, 106, The Rise of the Old Masters, is written by Henry Gilroy, which we've all heard in the Clone Wars. So a lot of these Clone Wars teams are coming back, with the exception of Weissman, of course, but a lot of these guys from the Clone Wars are going to be showing their, or having their talents in the Rebels, so we'll see how we know they do well in the Clone Wars, so
yep.
I'm looking forward to hearing them in the series, or seeing them and their stuff in the series. So that is what's going on in the Rebels, Star Wars Rebels front as of right now, so really excited about that. A lot of good stuff coming out, and like you said, we were talking about earlier, and hopefully we can get Alex Almont to come on. He has an advanced copy of A New Dawn by John Jackson Miller, the first foray into the story group, which is the new Lucasfilm story group, and it's going to kind of give us a precursor to what's happening in the Rebels, and it's going to feature Kanan and Hera and kind of go over that. And it's gotten some fairly good reviews so far. IGN's Eric Goldman gave it an 8 out of 10. It got only a 3 out of 5 stars from somebody named Megan Krause from Den of Geek. When we get Alex on sooner or later, he can give us his take on the book. So, like I said, anything else going on with Star Wars Rebels you want to mention, Chris, or anything Episode 7 that's happening right now that you want to talk about?
No, that we covered pretty much everything on those two.
You wanted to mention too, unfortunately, one of my favorite comedians of all time and great comedic actor, Oscar winner, Robin Williams. Of course, everybody knows he passed away recently. But you wanted to feature something with him and his connection to George Lucas and Star Wars.
Yeah. Robin Williams, you know, like you said, one of your – to me, Robin Williams was just the funniest man alive to me. He just I don't know. There was something about him that – he could literally walk out on stage and I'd crack up. He was just, there was just something about him, his personality, the way he was. And yeah, he's done a ton of films, and you see, you can kind of go back and look at like all the films that he's done. And there's a lot of them that to me weren't good. You know, they weren't very good films, but there are a lot of them that showcase him and his talent, like, The Birdcage or, Mrs. Doubtfire. I really like Jack. A lot of people didn't care for that. I thought that was a fun movie of having him act like a child. And it works.
Right.
I mean, you thoroughly believe he was a freaking child in that movie. So it's just, you know, a Dead Poet Society and just all these films that he's done. Good Morning Vietnam was one of my favorites. And with Aladdin, I thought he was something else in Aladdin. And the type of person that he was, and the fact that they actually did his parts, because he did ad-libbed most of everything he did in Aladdin. It was pretty much ad-libbed. Mm-hmm. They said, okay, this is basically what's going to happen, and you go with it. And then he would record everything, and then they would have to go back as animators and then animate every bit of it. Because mm-hmm. it's not like they can do it, and then he can perform it to the animation. They kind of do it backwards. And that's actually how they do the Clone Wars now. They basically do everything with the feel of it, and then they go back and animate all the features right. and everything. But anyway, right. Robin Williams did actually have a connection to Star Wars. Back in the late 70s, Gary Marshall, who is one of the people that he's done so many things big, and you know, movies and stuff like that, but he also did TV shows. He worked with Happy Days. Right. And his daughter, who was young at the time, went to see Star Wars, and she loved it. And she just thought it was the coolest thing, and she said, "Dad, why don't you have an alien on Happy Days?" And you're like, "What? An alien on Happy Days?" So she basically threw that out to her dad, and they figured out a way to have Bork from Ork come down and land and meet Fonz. And that's where that started, and then it's obviously it spun into the television show. It went directly into the TV show based off of that. And he had mentioned it in a couple of interviews in the past where he said, yeah, that's basically how it started out. His daughter made that comment, and then he went and did it. So if it wasn't for, you know, Gary Marshall's daughter seeing Star Wars, we wouldn't have had Mork from Ork.
Now, when you say Gary Marshall's daughter, you're talking about...
I don't know. Honestly, don't know.
I'm thinking Penny Marshall.
Yeah, that's who I'm thinking. But
she was.
It just mentioned his daughter. I don't think it mentioned the name. That would be even better. I'm not 100% sure it was Gary Marshall. I'm pretty sure that was the name, because he's the only recognizable name on the show for me. But I just thought that was such an interesting connection and house. I always kind of thought that Mork and Mindy had to had something to do with Star Wars because of when it came out. I mean, it came out, I believe, right. in 1978, right behind Star Wars. So you would think something like that had to have happened. But yeah. I mean, he was just one of, you know, Robin Williams. I can't say enough about Robin Williams. He's just my absolute favorite comedian, and watching him, and I really hate that his life took the path that it took.
So. Yeah, you know what? He was just I've been a fan of his since, and this is crazy. Like when I was a little kid, I remember like my dad. This is when Williams was first coming up. It's funny you just mentioned like the Mork and Mindy thing, because there's actually a marathon going right now on our local station here. Mm-hmm. They're doing a whole Mork and Mindy. They're showing every single episode. It's kind of funny you mentioned that. But I remember as a kid, being up in my room, because Robin Williams, of course, he's kind of vulgar in his stand up routines. And this is when he was first coming up. He did a bunch of stand up, and he did some specials, and they played on, you know, HBO or TV or whatever. And I remember being a kid and listening to him perform up in my room, because my dad was watching it downstairs. He goes, "Hey, this is not for you. You need to go up to your room and play," or whatever. But I would always sneak down to where you couldn't see me and just listen, because Williams was just, he was so incredible. And he made my dad laugh, which I thought was just like the greatest thing ever. Cause you know, sometimes, you know, when I grew up, it was kind of like, it was rough, you know, for a while there. My parents were, they had me pretty young, and they were trying to make things work, and they were working tons of jobs and just making ends meet. And so things were kind of tough, and just to hear my dad laugh was just a great thing. And I always tied that to Robin Williams. So he's always been like one of my favorite comedians. This guy was amazing. I mean, this guy can go, and when you go back and watch him work just stand up back in the day. And this guy could go into a crowd and just freestyle off the crowd and do improv off the crowd. He would go through the crowd and just pick apart people, not pick apart, but just make, just do his comedy. And it was freaking great. And he did that. He was able to do that throughout his career. I mean, he did it on the James Lipton series. It was called Inside the Actor's Studio. He was on that, and he was able just to go into the crowd, and he grabbed a like a scarf or something. And he did a bunch of improv off of that. I mean, this guy was just, he was so far ahead of everybody else comedy wise. He was so sharp, so fast. And all the movies he did was great. And he does have a kind of a connection to Lucas because he actually interviewed Lucas, I think on his, I think he had like a web show or something like that. And, oh, it was on Audible. That's what it was. It was Audible. He was able, he did an interview with George Lucas, so it was really good.
That's
so.
Right. As soon as you said it, I remembered, yes, he was the one that did the interview.
Yeah, yeah. And you can find that on, anywhere now, but it's really cool. And just one of those just sad things, like, God, you just got bummed out because this guy was so good. He was so giving to everybody and his time. And you know, like he did all this USO stuff and he did all this stuff with troops that you kind of never, nobody knew about.
I didn't know he ever did that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's just one of those things that he did. He didn't care. He didn't, obviously didn't get paid for it or anything like that. He just wanted to do it because he was a cool dude. You know, it's just like, these are the kind of people that you just get bummed when you hear that they passed. It's just like, oh man, you know, you just bummed. This guy was cool. He was funny. He did a lot of cool stuff, funny movies, and to me, I always just loved his stand-up stuff. It was just so good. So it's just sad to see him.
You start looking back on that like that. It reminds me of, and I know you remember this too because we're the same age. Mm-hmm. And one of the biggest things that he got involved in early on was the comic relief.
Yeah, right.
I'm sure a lot of people that are, you know, in their 20s don't really know what that is. I'm sure they've probably seen it because it's been mentioned here lately. But basically what that was Robin Williams, Billy Crystal, and Whoopi Goldberg together, since they were so close as comedians, they got to be great friends. They did what they call comic relief, which was charity for the homeless. They raised money for homeless, and it ran for like 8 or 9 years straight. And it was one of the best things to see all three of them do separate things. All three of them, to me, watching them three do something together was just amazing. And one thing that was so important with me and Robin Williams as far as why I liked him so much was I learned early on that he was what they called manic depressive. That's what they used to call it then. What it's referred to today is bipolar. And that's the reason why he was the way he was when you watched him. And I used to, anytime I hear he's going to do an interview on something, say like Johnny Carson show, anything like that, I had to watch it because it was so much fun to sit and watch him and watch the interviewer try and keep him contained, which is impossible because he'd come in and before he could even get seated down, he's doing something. He'll ask a question and he'll just start running. And he'll just run off with something and just go. And it's that's just so much fascinating. And it's interesting that when you actually see his best stand up, and I hate it because you can't get it on DVD or anything. The only way you can get it is either find it on YouTube or you get it on VHS, which is what I have. And that's Robin Williams Live at the Met. It was done in 1986. Yeah. And to me, still to this day, that's his best piece of work. I mean, he is just so funny. He and I like how people have asked him, is anything off limits? And he says, no, nothing is off limits. It's just the way you handle it.
Right.
And to me, I thought that was brilliant that he thought enough about it that he can make a joke about anything. It just depended on how you presented the joke to whether it would work or not. Mm-hmm. And he said, it's just, I don't know. I sit and, of course, after I heard about his death, I sat and watched several interviews, going back and looking and just enjoying seeing him on various shows and seeing him on the Oprah Winfrey show and stuff like that. And it's not always, you know, you come in, he's pushing this film, you know, or that film, but he's always such an interesting person to listen to.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned Live at the Met. That's another one of those classic ones that I go back and watch.
That has Star Wars references, by the way.
yeah. You know, so bringing it back to Star Wars right there, man. It's really cool. You had another story, too, you wanted to talk about, too, right?
The only other thing that I wanted to mention was, we don't have any details yet, but it's been, Disney has already come out and said, Star Wars expansion coming to Disney theme park.
Oh, so yeah, yeah.
They are going to push this. It's going to be next year. So basically, what I got from the article was, in 2015, things are going to start getting ahead and start, mm-hmm. information will start coming out. It's going to, from what I understand, it's going to take 2 to 3 years for them to get it going, to get right. everything done. But that, to me, is awesome. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, you go and look at these places now. Like, when we went to Orlando for Celebration, we went to the Disney parks, and to see what they've done with Star Wars there now, you know, you walk in and you got a huge AT-AT sitting there. So just imagine what it's going to be now. I mean, that's all geared around Star Tours, and they'll have some Ewoks, speeder bikes sitting there, that sort of thing. But
right.
I can't just imagine that it's going to be on the scale of like Pirates of the Caribbean and stuff, which, of course, that's where Pirates of the Caribbean started. It started mm-hmm. as a theme park, and then it evolved to the movies. So this is just going to be vice versa. I can't wait to see what kind of things are going to be coming down the line there.
Yeah, I'm excited, too, because, you know, it seems like Anaheim, the Anaheim Disneyland, which is the closest one, the one I always go to, it seems like it gets shortchanged a lot, especially with the Star Wars weekends. I mean, they never have them in Anaheim. It's always in Florida. And, you know, Florida's had celebrations on all that. So it's going to be cool to be able to go down in a few years and to see just Star Wars infused to these parks, and especially Anaheim, because, you know, they did some good stuff with Indiana Jones. The ride there was pretty fun. Mm-hmm. It's a good thing. And, man, it's going to be so cool to walk into it. Just a whole area. It's going to be all dedicated to
yeah,
Star Wars.
Can you,
and see what they do.
You imagine all the people that come to see Star Tours, and can you imagine what it's going to be like now? You know?
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah.
You
yeah,
have
it's
people
crazy like, now. It's crazy.
Oh,
now.
I don't
I remember
care to go.
I was there for the first the opening of Star Tours, the 2.0 version, right, Chris? This is back what I guess a few years ago now, and it was the first summer it opened, and it was so crazy that like as soon as the park opened, I ran over to the quick what they call it, Fast Pass, to get a Fast Pass for Star Tours, the new one. And it was so crazy that the Fast Pass I got in the morning, it was so busy that it was for 8 o'clock that night. So it was like my Fast Pass, I had to wait like, you know, 8 or 9 hours to use it. It was just, and of course I ran to the line right away so I could at least get on it twice. Like I got there, I got a Fast Pass, and then immediately got in line and waited in the line to get through it. But I mean, this is what it's going to be like for yep. this theme park. You know, it's going to be maddening. It's, yeah, it is fun though.
You know, I was going to say, I live in Tennessee, so I'm nowhere near either one of them. But because of Star Wars Celebration being in Orlando the last two times, mm-hmm. the first time I went and I took the tour and I went to go see the old Star Tour. So I got to see what the original one looked like, which mm-hmm. was really cool. And
right.
then, went back to this last one, and then I went to the Star Tours with the new one, so I got to see the new one. And I just went, I went and got on, and it was late at night, so it wasn't super busy. So, mm-hmm. you know, I might have to wait, you know, two rides and then get on. And I went, came right back out, went back in, went again, came right back out, went back in, and went in for the third time. By the time I got through with the third one, I was ill.
Huh.
I was like, okay, I'm nauseous now. I don't know why, but I got nauseous. So I was just like, well, three times was awesome.
Yeah, I mean, that's it's a flight simulator type ride. So, you know, it's when you get on it, it's – I remember the first time riding the original one, I was like, whoa, you know, you kind of feel like – it's just amazing technology. I mean, you do. I mean, there's people that were getting sick on it, and it's like, wow, this is – you know, and you know, it's just this platform moving around, and it's your eyes playing tricks on you, but still, woo. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not, you know, you gotta, if you don't like flying, you're probably not gonna like this ride,
yeah.
you know, because it makes you, it makes you feel like you're flying. So, yeah, it's just, man, it's gonna be so fun to see what they do with Disneyland and Star Wars. Can't wait for that. Anything else before we head on to things that make you go,
well, let's
I think Alex is around too.
Yep.
I think we'll try to get him on in a minute.
Yeah,
all right, Chris. So we got Alex Ryback on the line. He was able to join us, which is cool. We're going to add him in here. And Alex, first of all, welcome to the Sarlacc Pit podcast.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
So, Alex, we want to have you on. We've actually wanted to have you on last week because we had a pretty cool topic talking about our things we wanted to see. But that's okay. We got you. We got you here now. And first of all, let's get into you. And you're formerly from the Scum and Villainy radio podcast, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
And unfortunately, I guess things had to close shop over there. But that's cool because we got you over here. And who knows, maybe we can get you on many more times to come. But, you know, ever since we started the show years and years and years ago, one of the things we like to always ask our guests is how did you get involved in this crazy universe of Star Wars, Alex? How'd you get involved?
Well, from a kid, yeah, I was probably 5 or 6. And my father was a big influence, definitely a fan of the Wars. So he introduced me to them. Oh. And, you know, it was just kind of something that always was interested in and always enjoyed. And then definitely got into, you know, expanded universe and really got deep into the universe during my teenage years. Yeah, I mean, it's just something that's kind of always been there. It's hard to pinpoint an exact, you know, time or place that I fell in love with the franchise. But
right. It's easy for someone like us older guys like me and Chris, because, you know, we were there when the movies came out. I mean, we were really young. Don't get me wrong. I mean, it's hard to remember that far. We were only 6, 7 years old or whatever. But it's always kind of cool to hear different takes on how people got involved and what age they were. And you, being a younger fan, your dad kind of was – how old is your dad, if you don't mind me asking?
So my dad just turned 50.
Okay, so he's not too far. He's a little ahead of us, but yeah, definitely around.
Yeah, it's definitely great to hear him talk about going. You know, he definitely remembers vividly going to see the originals in theaters.
Yeah,
and you know, just to hear him talk about the immensity of it and how huge it was at the time, just from the lines outside the theaters and just all the coverage he got in the news. He said, you know, it's just something that he had known nothing about beforehand. And you know, it had kind of been out in theaters for a couple months before he finally went and checked it out. But
right, and it's good because that is something that an older fan would actually be able to talk about more. Like me and Chris, we were only, you know, like I said, 6 or 7 or whatever, so we don't kind of remember just the fever pitch that happened. I mean, we obviously read about it and we hear it from our parents because our parents are the ones that took us to it. So that's where, you know, Chris, like, I remember my dad, mom telling me it was just crazy, especially Empire when we were 10 or 9 or whatever, that just the lines were incredible and just that whole fever pitch of the whole thing. I mean, I'm sure your parents told you the same thing, right, Chris?
Yeah, I remember, like I said, we were 7, and so that would have put, Alex, that would have put your dad at like 13, which would have been, you know, prime age for a young teen to be going and seeing Star Wars, and he would have had more of a knowledge about everything going on around it. And I know from me being 7, and this was so funny, is because when we went to Celebration several years back, I did an interview. I never thought about it. I was like, wait a minute, my mom and dad, I wanted to ask them. So I sat down and did an interview with my parents about what I was like when I came home. And I was just like, and the way they put it to me was, when I came home from seeing that with my aunt at 7 years old, I wouldn't shut up about it. I just kept talking. I would not leave them alone until they went and saw it with me. And then they were pleasantly surprised, my mom and dad both, at how good the movie was. Just, you know, from a 7-year-old, you know, yeah, 7-year-old loving a movie, you know, whatever. You know, I'm sure, Matt, you've had to take your kids to movies that you really could care less about seeing.
Yeah.
And then you get home and have your parents realize how good of a movie it is. It just kind of, I don't know, embedded it. And, yeah, you know, we saw things on TV and stuff, but I know me and Matt probably didn't really understand any of what was going on outside of it until, at least till Empire, because we were 10. And I remember Empire was so much bigger. And by Jedi, with me being 13, when Jedi came out, I was full aware of it.
Right. Yeah, that's when it really hit home. And, you know, the figures, which we'll talk about later. But, yeah. So that's cool, Alex. We got you here. You have already read – we kind of briefly talked about this new book coming out by John Jackson Miller called A New Dawn, which is set to come out just in a few days, September 2nd.
Yep.
But Alex, you have already actually, at least if not part of this book, you've read the whole thing. So this is kind of the book, Alex, that's kind of ushering in this new phase of Star Wars with Lucasfilm and Disney. This is the one that's kicking it off and starring Kanan and Hera. So kind of like a spoiler-free kind of preview, if you can tell us what you thought of the book.
Yeah, I loved it, definitely. You know, I've always been a fan of John Jackson Miller since his work on the Knights of the Old Republic comic books.
Right.
And, you know, just an amazing story, you know, definitely a gifted storyteller. The same with Kenobi that he had come out last year. And so, you know, I was definitely excited when I saw that he was going to be, you know, attached to this new group of writers that we see, you know, because we've had a lot of great writers, you know, be gifted enough to work on Star Wars in the past. And so it's kind of nice to see them carry some of them over as they're rebooting it. But yeah, the book, you know, like you said, it follows Kanan and Hera, and it takes place a few years before Rebels. So okay. One of the most interesting things that I found was, we've seen very little, but what we have seen of Rebels, we kind of have an idea in our heads of, right. You know, what roles everybody's filling and kind of, you know, what's driving them. We've gotten the Rebel visual guide that kind of gave us some background information on them. So it was interesting to me to see how far they still have to come between the events that take place in this book and the TV show. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we see Kanan and he's just completely, you know, different than what we've seen in Rebels as far as, you know, his maturity, what he's willing to do for other people. You know, he's very solitude and he doesn't want to have attachments to anybody or anything, you know, kind of Han Solo-esque where he just doesn't care about anybody else. He's just doing his own thing. And so it's really interesting to see how these characters grow throughout the book to become the characters we'll know in Rebels.
So does this give the reader an idea of, because Chris mentioned it earlier about Kanan, and he survives, obviously he's got to survive the purge. Does it go into how he did that?
So nothing specific. We do learn, and I don't want to spoil too much, but we do learn that Kanan Jarrus isn't not his real name.
Oh, okay.
Which
oh,
I found cool. was really interesting. He changed his name after the purge. Oh. And for the prologue of the book, it's really neat. We see Obi-Wan Kenobi, and we see Kanan as a young child in the temple being trained by Obi-Wan Kenobi. And coincidentally, they're talking about the relay system that they have sent up there at the temple that would warn away Jedi if there's ever, you know, a catastrophe, like we see him in Revenge of the Sith when we see him send out that message warning other Jedi to stay away. So it's pretty interesting that we see a young Kanan asking Obi-Wan Kenobi about this system and, well, what do we do if the alarm ever comes out? You know, where are we supposed to go hide and whatnot? And so it definitely lays a lot of groundwork, but it doesn't paint us a whole picture as far as how he survived the purge. We just know that, you know, he definitely moved around a lot, doesn't stay in one place for any amount of years, and just pretty much, you know, rewrote his history and his character traits. Just, you know, we see him purposefully not using the Force, where he's in a situation where maybe it comes naturally and he has to fight to keep it down and hidden inside him.
Hmm. Great.
Cool. Yeah, I that's good. I didn't have any idea that Kanan Jarrus wasn't his. Is that like a big part of the book, or is that just something that they kind of threw in there as? I mean, he changed it because he's trying to hide. I'm assuming that's why he changed his name then.
Yeah, I guess the concern was that they knew that the Empire would have access to the Jedi archives, and we see him once or twice throughout the book kind of being worried or not even worried, but just kind of apprehensive that they might have like my holo recording and they might know what I look like. Like who knows how much information the Empire has. So, but yeah, the name dropping of Kanan being his new name is just kind of dropped on us early on, and it doesn't really go too in depth. It's just kind of brought up, and he always refers to himself as Kanan when we see him kind of thinking in first person there. So he's totally taken on this new identity, and it's only when we see him remembering his younger self that we see him refer to his you know, original name.
You know, that makes perfect sense. What I had mentioned earlier about the Star Wars Rebels, the visual guide, it just basically says that he was 14 years old when the Order 66 happened, and then he went into hiding, and that we'll apparently get the rest of that information as the series goes along. But that's interesting that he changed his name, and that makes actually perfect sense at why Yoda and Obi-Wan didn't change their names. But what, I mean, to me, it would have been pointless. Palpatine knew exactly who they were. He'd been working with them for years. So what would have been the point in changing their name?
Yeah. You know,
I mean, especially Yoda. I mean, yeah, they're, as far as we've seen, the entire saga, we've only seen two of his species. So,
right.
With Obi-Wan, he could have actually changed his name, but the way he went about it, from what we understand, is he just went into hiding and he didn't talk to anybody. So that was, I don't know. That's very interesting to me.
It sounds like, from what Alex is saying, this is actually going to be pretty
now
good.
Now I'm thinking I'm going to have to get that book.
Yeah, I know, definitely. Yeah, definitely. So I'm seeing here also, Alex, that it has an illustrator named Douglas Wheatley. Is there artwork in this book?
No, there's not.
Oh, okay. I wonder what that is then.
That must just be the cover.
I guess it's just for the cover art.
Oh, okay, gotcha. Okay, I was thinking maybe there's some...
Yeah, duh, Matt.
...artwork inside, okay. Duh. All right, I don't know, it's weird. I just thought maybe there was something going on, like, give us a few...
That would have been cool, though, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
I guess he'll leave that up to the visual guide. I highly recommend the visual guide. Like I said, I just got mine yesterday, and I went through some of it, and just, I skimmed the whole book, but I didn't read everything. I just wanted to see what all was in there, and there's a lot of interesting facts in there. It kind of gives you some heads up. And Ezra's a very interesting character because he's just basically a runaway. He lost his parents, and it really didn't specify exactly what happened to him, so I'm thinking that might come up in the series.
Have you guys read it's one of the young adult books that just came out, Ezra's Gamble?
No. I actually forgot that was out.
Yeah, it was published by Disney, and it came out, I don't know, maybe about a month ago at this point, and it kind of served as a prequel to the series, too. And it was just kind of an interesting look at him before Rebels. It's like a team-up between him and Bossk, and so they teamed up together to try and sort out some corruption that's going on with the Empire there on Lothal.
Okay, yeah, I see that right here. It's only on Amazon. You can pick it up for $6.29. Ooh, save 10%. Better rush and get it.
Yeah, I thought this book might be targeted at that young reader thing. That's why the illustrator thing was kind of. That's why I asked that. So, on a scale of 8 to 10, or a scale of 10, Alex, what would you give this book?
I give A New Dawn 9. It was phenomenally written. Cool. Very, very impressed. And you know, I've always been a fan of the EU. We've had some hits and we've had some misses, but definitely in recent memory, it's one of the better books that we've seen.
Wow. That's good.
Speaking of the books, there's another book called Star Wars Rebels, Rise of the Rebels.
I picked that up, but I have not read it yet.
Is it like the other one? It's a young reader book?
It is, and I believe that this one actually covers the events of the first episode of Rebels.
Okay.
It's an actual tie-in to the events that we see. I think maybe like the first two episodes.
Yeah, it says chapter book retells an episode of the show.
Yep.
Okay, so I don't want that one. At least not until after the show's run. Then I can go back and read it. But that Ezra's Gamble seems like that ought to be interesting.
It was pretty interesting. One of the things I found interesting is, you know, we see Bossk, and he's one of the main characters in the book, and we get a lot of insight into how the Bounty Hunters Guild is working with the Empire, and I thought that was kind of something we hadn't seen before.
So I guess that means Bossk will be in the series somewhere?
Maybe. I know we had heard hints at one point that one of the minor characters we saw in the Clone Wars would be showing up in Rebels, so maybe it's Bossk.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Yeah, a lot of characters that we're seeing show up in the series. You know, it's kind of cool. So Alex, we talked about this briefly earlier about just the whole Rebel series as a whole. Just overall, what are your thoughts on what we've seen so far of the actual television show? What are your feelings?
I'm excited for it. I got into the Clone Wars kind of late. I definitely wasn't a supporter of it right from the get-go. It wasn't probably until the fourth season that I finally got into it and started watching it consistently. So I'm definitely excited to be with Rebels right from the get-go this time around.
Yeah, yeah, cool. Yeah, we'll have plenty more to talk about Rebels as the future comes on. But September 2nd, A New Dawn comes out, and it's got high praise from Alex here. So
yeah, we got five more weeks before we could see Rebels, and I'm kind of coming unglued. I'm ready for it to start.
He's ready for it. He's ready for it. So we're going to get into our topic here in just a second. But before we do that, Alex, if you haven't heard the show before, I like to, and Chris does too. He's brought up something last time we recorded. There's certain things as I watch these movies over and over again that kind of get stuck in my mind, and I always have these alternate takes on what could have happened. And I've entitled this segment "Things That Make You Go Hmm." And today's segment features I'm going to be going kind of back and forth. I'm going to go into the Clone Wars, and I'm going to be going to Episode 7, and maybe, and of course, the Rebels, and that is about the Inquisitors. Things that make you go hmm. 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 Robbie Rob, break it down. All right, so like I said, we're going to be talking about the Inquisitors this week, and I'm going to take you first of all, guys, to Season 2 of the Clone Wars. Alex, you were just talking about the Clone Wars, how you got into it late. But I'm going to take you guys to Season 2, Episode number 3. And the title of this particular one back in 2009 was Children of the Force. Now take a listen to what Palpatine has to say. And this is a whole story about capturing children and using them. Capturing children and using them sort of for a dark purpose. Check out what Palpatine has to say.
There, there, child. Soon you'll cry no more.
Master, subjects of this age rarely survive the slave conditioning procedure.
I'm afraid the risk is necessary. The natural talent these children possess is too great to be wasted by the Jedi. I foresee an army of Force-talented spies in my service, trained in the dark side to peer into every corner of the galaxy from afar. And my enemies would be helpless against such vision. If the surgery fails, I will have lost nothing.
Okay, so I can't take credit for this. It is actually somebody else had mentioned this, and it just sparked something in me. And that was actually Brian Young for Big Shiny Robot. He's been on the show before, but he had tweeted this out, and it just got me thinking. Now, so you hear this, you hear that Palpatine wants a bunch of Force talented spies to work for him, and that immediately got everybody thinking that this could be something to do with the Inquisitors. Now, we know we're going to see the Inquisitors in the Rebels, right? Jason Isaacs is providing the voice of the main Inquisitor. And could this Inquisitor also, or Inquisitors, could they also show up in Episode 7? Entirely speculation. I have no concrete evidence of this whatsoever. But there was also a picture that was tweeted out. I don't know if you guys saw this, of something to do with a guy in a mask with a cloak, and he's holding a fractured Darth Vader helmet. Did you guys ever see this photo that kind of was hitting the web in the last few weeks? I don't know. Did you see that, Chris?
Yeah, I did.
Okay. Did you see that photo, Alex?
I missed it.
Okay. It was kind of going around, and it looks like people are saying that it could be an Inquisitor. And could Lucas have envisioned this way back when they did the Clone Wars? I don't know. Maybe I'm stretching that just a little bit. But it does just make you think, wow, this is wild that here's Palpatine back in the Clone Wars thinking of Force-talented spies. And could that translate into the Inquisitors? I don't know, but it's something that's made me go, I don't know. We might have something there. Only time will tell. So what do you think, Chris? Am I just way off in there, or was this a thing about the children of the Force? Was
no,
and the way he's talking about, I mean, he's talking about Force talented spies. I mean, what could he be talking about here?
That does sound very interesting. I don't know about it if you're overreaching or anything, but when you're talking about that, it makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm.
But then it also kind of reminded me of when you mentioned George Lucas, it kind of makes me think of Mara Jade, you know, and what she was in the Thrawn trilogy, where she was basically an invisible hand, is what she was referred to as, right hand of Palpatine, where she did his bidding outside of the Sith. Mm-hmm. So that does kind of, you know, that had to have been proved by Lucasfilm, so you know. And then that was, I think, considered canon or close to canon at the time. So that, you know, that could have been something that came from George Lucas. When it comes down to this, and it's starting to tie into three different mediums, whether it be Clone Wars, the Rebels, and then Episode 7, it kind of does make me think that it's got to have something to do with Lucas.
Well, I also heard something, too, about how maybe a character in Clone Wars or in Rebels, or a voice or something like that, was going to appear in Episode 7. So then that's where I started to tie in. Well, maybe it is this Inquisitor thing. And of course, all this stuff is purely speculation and rumor about the Inquisitors showing up in Episode 7.
That could be Obi-Wan, too, you know.
What's that?
So that could be Obi-Wan, too, because his voice is going to be in Rebels, and it could appear also. I want to see Luke go back at some point and look at holocrons or something of Obi-Wan and Yoda, or both, or either one in Episode 7. I think that would just be an amazing way to tie things together.
Yeah, I don't know. I saw that tweet, and it just got me thinking about, wow, could they have thought about that, things like this way back then, or Lucas, and maybe he forwarded it to the new team. I don't know. Alex, you got any thoughts on this? I mean, I know you haven't seen the photo of this Inquisitor guy, but I know you know the Inquisitors and Rebels.
That
and
photo to me just looks like something a fan did. It doesn't really.
It could have been, yeah. Definitely could have been some kind of Photoshop thing. But what do you think, Alex? Anything?
I think it's a great idea. I kind of like the idea of, you know, Luke and the rest of our heroes having to clean, still all this time after, clean up, you know, the effects that Palpatine's had on the galaxy. If he, you know, created these Inquisitors and they've still been around, you know, even if they've been lying low and they're just kind of coming back now. But I do like the idea of having to deal with, you know, with Luke having to deal with the legacy of his father and, you know, by extension, Palpatine and all the terror and stuff that they've wrought on the galaxy, you know?
Yeah. No, I do too, because ever since we've heard Episode 7's coming out, I'm like, I want him to go in a new direction and everything, but also there's a part of me that's like, man, it's, how do you do a Star Wars without Sith? You know, it's just like, it's hard. It's, but these Inquisitor guys and all the ties and maybe that they're talking about, I don't know. It could work. I mean,
well, too, one thing that kind of, when you look at this Star Wars Rebels visual guide, it gives you a breakdown. There's going to be different, factions within the Imperial Army. I guess is a way to put it. You got Palpatine at the top. We know Vader's under him with the Sith, and then you've got the Inquisitors, which we'll learn more as we go what those are. But then you've also got these Imperial governors, and then they have right-hand people, according to this book, is what I get out of it. They have a right-hand person that's basically, it's kind of like Vader to Emperor. It's just like they're the demolition characters. Mm-hmm. They go out and do the bidding of the Empire, and they spread fear, and that's what a lot of this is going to be, is that they look to spread fear among the civilizations and stuff. It's kind of what I'm getting, just what little bit I've gotten from it so far. So it kind of makes you wonder, after the Emperor's gone, what's going to happen to all of these? They're not going to, you would think they wouldn't stay as a unit working like they were. You would think they would break apart somehow, and it'd be interesting to see who does what, where, and what, and, you know, and all this stuff when it comes around to Episode 7 and what exactly they're going to be up against.
That's an interesting point. If I can bring up real quick, we kind of saw the same thing in A New Dawn, and we see this infrastructure, and it's really interesting because a lot of these people that are in high positions of power were in positions of power under the Old Republic. So, you know, you're right. They the government changed from the Republic to the Empire, but these people stayed in power and, you know, now take advantage of the, you know, different set of rules and things they can get away with under the Empire. So it'll definitely be interesting to see when things revert back, where they end up going.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know. It's, man, so much to go over and cover. I mean, it's one of those things that, you know, you start with a little tiny thing like, oh, it's Children of the Force and Palpatine has these force sensitive spies that he wants to create. I mean, look how far you can go. It's just, oh man, it's really cool. But yeah, is there any ties to that? I don't know. I guess, like I said, we'll see. It's, could they have been thinking that far in advance? And I don't know. We'll see. But, just one of those things that made me go, when I read it. So that's cool.
Yeah. I look at it this way. George Lucas is in charge. And yes, he thought about everything.
Yeah. So with that, you guys ready to get into our main topic here, Chris?
Yeah, I'm ready to go.
All right, here we go.
Hello there. You're listening to the Sarlacc Pit Podcast, an elegant podcast for a more civilized age. You can go about your business. Move along. Move along.
So, Chris, you had texted me and you said, hey, I want to talk about some Star Wars vintage on the next podcast. And I said, you know what? Let's do it. You probably know way more than me or Alex, but I'm going to go ahead and tag along for the ride on this thing and try to infuse what I can. But let's talk about, you know, action figure collecting now is this huge. I mean, we got all these online stores now and we got, you know, 6-inch, which is my focus right now. But let's talk about where it first began. This is Kenner. You know, this is back in early, or, you know, after 77, they were actually offered it to Mego, which refused the offer. They didn't want to deal with the license of Star Wars. So Kenner picked it up. And in 1977, a movie called Star Wars hit and the rush for toys was on after that. And Kenner was not, I mean, this, everybody kind of knows the story. Kenner was not prepared for this, obviously.
No.
And so what do we get? We got the early bird certificate, which started off in the Christmas market of 77. And it wasn't until after that, I guess they started coming in February, that we started getting introduced to vintage, the classic Kenner vintage Star Wars figure. So we're going to talk about that a little bit today, Chris. And the first thing I think that kind of, you sent me a list of the whole, all the waves, right, Chris?
Yes. I broke it all down.
And you broke it all down. And the first thing that caught my eye was, we're so used to waves nowadays as coming every few months. And how they did it back in that time was, we got waves 1 through 8. And it encompassed all the years, 78 through 1985. So these were waves that were coming out kind of like almost year by year, right, Chris?
Yes.
Not month by month like you see nowadays. So that was like the first thing that kind of blew my mind was, you know, 1978, Chris, May of 1978. Let's talk about wave 1 that came out.
Okay. Well, one thing that, you know, and Matt, you mentioned it right off the, at the start of how we're so used to waves coming every 2-3 months. Every 3 months, you got a new wave into the stores. Well, when we were kids, and neither Matt nor I even knew this until we were, you know, grown. I didn't even know this, didn't realize it. Each May of each year, they would release that wave of figures. And so you had a whole year to buy those figures.
Right.
And, of course, you had a whole year to buy it, all the figures. All of these figures were always on carded, and they were continued on. So, but basically what I wanted to kind of show, this to me cements it, how popular Star Wars was back in 1977. Like you said, the Kenner signed on late in the deal to do some colorful space toys, as they had put it. And then, of course, when Star Wars came out, they were caught completely off guard. And for that Christmas, they did the early bird kit, which contained 4 figures. And those they started mailing those out in January, February. You got Princess Leia, R2-D2, Chewbacca, and Luke Skywalker. And then in May of 1978, now think about this. Star Wars came out May 25th, 1977. Well, you couldn't go into a store and buy an action figure until May of 1978. So for these figures to be so popular when they hit 1 year after the movie was released, that tells you right there at how popular Star Wars was. So what I have done is I've sat down and I've broken down all of the figures. In the vintage era, we had 97 individually different action figures released. Now, if you include Size Noodles and the Rebo Band 3-pack, that makes it 100. But I didn't put them on the list because, to me, they weren't carded. They were just kind of put in a package together. But starting out, we had the original 12. Okay. We had Han Solo, Chewbacca, Luke Skywalker, Princess Leia, Sand People, which is, that's what it was referred to on the card, C-3PO, right. R2-D2, Stormtrooper, Darth Vader, Obi-Wan, Death Squad Commander, love that name, and a Jawa. Now, when I was a kid, you know, and I think back, and we've talked about the action figures as we were a kid, like what was our favorite, such that we did that as a topic, and then we did the toys. But we never sat down and really broken down wave by wave. So on this wave in the original 12, I have a really hard time saying, oh, that's my favorite, because those original 12 to me were just so special, because when you finally got to bring home toys to play with, those were the 12 we got. And you kind of look at them, you think, why in the world would you do a Death Squad Commander? And, or necessarily, you know, Sand People and Jawa, you can kind of say, okay, because they were just cool little characters. But you had all the main characters right there. And to me, the original 12 was just something that just, even looking back, I still have my original 12. I actually have my original first 24 figures from when I was a kid. But, Matt, when you look back on the original 12 when it first came out, what are some of your thoughts and memories that come to mind when you think of just those 12 figures?
What comes to mind is being, you know, 8 years old or seven and being outside and burying these things in dirt and having all kinds of battles with these things and stuff like that. It's just, I wish I can go back to like my old house back then and start digging around, because that would be like a definite like treasure hunt, because I know there's plenty of these things buried in the dirt somewhere around there. But yeah, I didn't remember opening these things like for birthdays and Christmases and having multiple Stormtroopers and the Darth Vader, of course, my favorite character. Having the Lukes and the Leias and the Chewbaccas and even the Death Star Commander. I mean, he was basically one of the not big characters, but he was a major character, because he was all over the Death Star. And of course the Han Solo had all these figures and the capes, the vinyl capes, you know, which was fun. And the Luke with the extending lightsaber. Now, this is the time where the lightsaber actually came out of the hand,
which was really cool.
Yeah, which was a lot different. Yeah, you don't see that anymore. So that was obviously a great first batch. I mean, this is what ushered in like collecting. I mean, this is kind of like Star Wars had reinvigorized the whole, you know, movie franchise as far as sci-fi. Oh my gosh. Anyway,
and when they came out, they were
in there. Hold on, I'll take care of that. But this is the collecting that kind of ushered in what we see today. You know, this is what started all, at least for me and for many people. And as a whole, you know, collecting, as far as collecting in general, I mean, this is kind of what started it off. So Alex, I don't know. Do you have any of these figures at all?
No, none from the,
like your dad didn't have any or anything like that.
Oh, my dad does. But they're nothing that he passed on to me.
I love that.
Yeah. Maybe someday, huh? Maybe someday you get those.
All right. Well, for you.
I'm hoping that's part of my inheritance. Well, you can keep the money. Just give me the action figures.
Yeah. Didn't you have the He-Man figures when you were a kid? The Power of the Force 2, the one that they had bulked up figures. Was that the ones that you got when you were little?
Yeah, there was Power of the Force. I had definitely the Shadows of the Empire line that they had.
Those are you're saying those are the big bulky ones, right? They're all like He-Man'd up or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were a little bulky.
Yeah, the Chewie looked terrible, but you know, still bought them. I still went in and bought them when they first came out. But
so before you go on to Wave 2, Chris, one other thing I want to mention about this particular wave was we got to talk about the vinyl cape Jawa.
Yes.
And the whole, like, the story behind that, if I'm correct, and correct me if I'm wrong, is they did make the vinyl cape Jawa, but they decided that it was kind of a small figure.
Yep.
And rather than charge, you know, they were charging the same price. And so they said, let's kind of beef it up or make it a little more enticing by making an actual cloth cloak. Is that correct?
Yes, that's exactly what happened.
So that's why you get this major thing, like one of the things that you look for when you're looking for classic Kenner is the one of the holy grails is the vinyl Cape Jawa, because they just produce so few of these things because they changed it after like the first year, I believe. They went to the cloth robe instead of the vinyl cape. So,
yeah, because I never remember even seeing the plastic cape.
Right, yeah. No, so whenever you, if you're kind of a younger viewer or listener and you're like always hear this vinyl cape Jawa thing, that's what they're talking about is there was such a small run of those because they changed it pretty soon after that. So
which
that's
the
vinyl
cape. You know, thing. I would have rather had the cloth one anyway as a kid because it looked just like it in the movie. So
right, yeah.
You know,
yeah,
and I had several of those.
So let's go to wave two, and this was wave two was done in 1979, Chris. Wave two, and the first thing we got to talk about is there actually was a mail away for a figure that we had no idea what it was because you know Boba Fett didn't come out until his first appearance was in the Christmas special, but you didn't see him until Empire Strikes Back. So talk about this, Chris, a mail away figure that we didn't even see yet on film.
Yeah. And I got something here to play, so I'm going to listen to this right quick before we start talking about it.
Okay.
From Kenner's Star Wars collection comes a Stormtrooper, the Sand People, and all 20 action figures, including new Hammerhead, Snaggletooth, and more, each sold separately. And now Boba Fett, Star Wars villain, with his laser rifle. Boba Fett is not yet available in stores, but you can get him free with four proofs of purchase from any Star Wars action figures. Details on specially marked packs at participating stores. Offer ends May 31st. Star Wars action figures sold separately from Kenner.
Yeah, May 31st, 1979. He didn't mention the year, but it is on there. And in this way, it was also, it was a mail away, and that's how I got mine. It was supposed to be rocket firing Boba Fett.
Right, right.
And because of the Battlestar Galactica, they had a couple of the small vehicles, and they had little missile launchers in it. And right. I remember seeing this on the news and stuff. The kids were choking on these little small missiles that were like an inch. And it was actually killing a couple of kids. Because I remember when I got the Battlestar Galactica vehicle, as soon as I got it, my mom saw the news, and then she come and took my missiles away from it and threw them away. And that kind of pissed me off. But then when we got to Boba Fett, we got this little note in it that said, We apologize for any inconvenience, but due to safety reasons, we had to glue the missile in. And if you aren't satisfied, it does say this, that you could mail it back, and they will send you any character other than Boba Fett that you want. And I was thinking, who in the world would send it back? But in this particular way, we actually had, it's actually 9 action figures that you could go to a store and buy it on a card, which after the mail away, Boba Fett was released on a card, and it is still one of the rarest figures as well because it wasn't widely spread like the other ones. We had Boba Fett, Greedo, Power Droid, which was kind of a dumb figure, but I had to have it and I loved it. R5-D4, then you had Walrus Man, Hammerhead, Snaggletooth from the Cantina. You had the Death Star Droid, then we had another Luke with his X-Wing pilot, which was really cool. And then you had a blue Snaggletooth that came with the Sears exclusive. Sears had its own exclusive Cantina set, and it came with blue Snaggletooth, and then it came with Greedo, Hammerhead, and Walrus Man as well. But the blue Snaggletooth was full size like the other action figures, and it was just dressed in a blue space-age costume, whereas opposed to the regular Snaggletooth that was sent out on a card was the short short one in a kind of a maroon outfit, was just a shorter version of him. And I never did have the blue Snaggletooth growing up. My cousin did, but I ended up getting that from him. Later on, I got it when he was tired of it, so I had it for a while. But it's every single wave, each year they had at least one mail away. In 79, actually, before the Boba Fett mail away, they had a where you could send off, I think it was 4 proof of purchase at the time, and get this 12 action figure display stand. It was just a little oblong plastic piece that you set your figures on that had pegs to set the figures on. It had a little cardboard backing and it had little levers at the front where you can slide them back and forth and it would move the figures, you know, around to where you can kind of simulate a battle. And that was one of the coolest things I ever had. And to this day, I have no idea what happened to it. Even when I got older and sold off a lot of my toys, I don't remember that playset. I don't know what happened to it. That was something I never would have gotten rid of, so I don't know what happened to it. But as far as the second wave, I just always loved the second wave because that's when we got the Cantina guys, Greedo and Hammerhead and Walrus Man. And, of course, Boba Fett having that was just such a cool character, even though we had no idea what he was going to be doing. You know, we didn't know. All we saw was a little cartoon of him and then to have him in the film. So as for you, and I love the Luke in the X-Wing. I always thought that was such a cool figure at the time. So I don't know, Matt, what about this wave?
Well, you know what? The first thing that always kind of jumps at you at this particular wave was just the, you know, they went totally opposite of that first wave of all the main characters. And this thing is just all like aliens and droids. You know what I mean? Pretty much. Yeah. And, except for the Luke, of course. And it was just like a colorful, it's just a colorful wave. I mean, it's just, you got Greedos and the Hammerheads and the Yak Faces, like, and, or the,
Snaggletooth.
Snaggletooth and all that. So, and there's another one. The Snaggletooth and the Boba Fett are both one of those Holy Grail type of things. And collecting, it's just those ones that are really hard to find, of course. Obvious reasons, because of the Boba Fett, because of the recall, and then the Snaggletooth thing, too. So, very colorful batch or wave, and then it's got two of the most sought-after characters in collecting right now is the Boba Fett and the Snaggletooth. So, that's the wave two. What else? Wave three, Chris?
Yeah, wave three. Now, this is wave three. We move into The Empire Strikes Back.
Boba Fett, Darth Vader, Chewbacca, and 18 other action figures, all from Kenner Star Wars The Empire Strikes Back Collection, each sold separately. At participating stores, you can check specially marked packages for details on how to get the secret figure. New Bossk, alien bounty hunter, not available in stores yet, free with 4 proofs of purchase from any of The Empire Strikes Back action figures. Offer expires May 31st, 1980. Darth Vader, Chewbacca, Boba Fett, and other action figures, each sold separately. From Kenner Star Wars The Empire Strikes Back Collection.
So that particular figure, May 31st, 1980, that was done 2 weeks after the movie opened. You couldn't send in for that figure anymore. Now, this particular, the first wave, we get all your main characters and a couple of sidekick characters. You get Lando Calrissian. You got Princess Leia in her Bespin gown. Han Solo in his Hoth outfit. Imperial Stormtrooper in Hoth battle gear, which was a snowtrooper. Luke Skywalker in his Bespin fatigues. You got Rebel Soldier on Hoth battle gear. Bespin security guard, we got a white one. And I'll explain that a little bit later. That doesn't mean to be racist. That's just distinguish the two characters. Bossk, which was a mail away and also carded. Then we had FX-7, the medical droid. And then IG-88, the bounty hunter. Now, this first wave, I remember going to school one day before the movie ever came out. Because I got to see the movie before anybody else, because I lucked out and got to see a preview screening of it a week or 2 weeks before the movie came out. But I remember going to school, and one of my friends had Lando and Han, and I was like, whoa, where are the figures coming from? I didn't know. Of course, I didn't know that they were out yet. And, of course, then I had to start bugging my mom. And the thing I remember so much about this wave was that we got Han Solo in Hoth outfit first. And I was so aggravated because I'm like, great, now I have to play Empire Strikes Back and Han flying around to Bespin and everything in his Hoth outfit. It's just, as a kid, I'm like, this is so dumb. I need the Bespin Han. So I had to use the old Han as it. And, of course, in my brain, it still didn't work. But, you know, I was kind of authentic about the figures I wanted. Oh, I know, I need that one from that scene, you know, as a kid, so... It was cool getting two bounty hunters. Did you get to see just a split second really on screen? So you get Bossk and IG-88, and those were just such cool figures. And getting the FX-7, that was kind of odd, but it was still a really cool figure in the way they did it. So for you, how was it, this first wave of Empire figures?
Yeah, May 1980, wave three, and the Bossk, what was the Bossk was the mail wave.
Yeah, the Bossk.
Was there another one too, or is that the only one?
No, there's another one later on. I'll get to that.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, I remember having the IG-88. I had actually a couple of those, a couple of Rebel Soldiers. And I think the highlights were, just because I was a Rebel fan, was the Luke and the Han. I love those characters. And I had a couple of the regular stormtroopers as well. I liked it. You know, I got a few of those for Christmas. I remember
Heck yeah.
But yeah, and then the Lando, of course. But yeah, I think that the two standouts for me were the Luke and the Han, because I was just a fan of the Rebels and those two guys. And anything and everything that I could pick up between Luke and Han, I always picked up, or I always got for birthdays and Christmases or whatever. So those are the two standouts for me.
Alex, how about you on any or even picking up any of these modern figures that are these, like Han and Hoth or something?
Yeah, I've never been as, I guess, picky as far as the action figures having to be in the right attire as far as what scene I had them recreating. But, yeah, I did definitely but you know what? Whenever I tend to play with the figures as a kid, I usually ended up not recreating any scene whatsoever, because I was kind of just getting figures here and there. So I never had enough to actually recreate a whole scene. So I would just kind of make up my own scenes where characters who never met in the movies would suddenly be meeting up. And so they would just kind of overlook each other's inappropriate attire.
Okay. Well, I had a big imagination, but it just drove me nuts not having the Bespin Han. I had to freaking have Han and Hoth flying the Falcon. It just bugged me, you know, as a kid. But that was just me.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, maybe the heater broke on the Falcon, so he's wearing his Hoth gear.
True. True. And Chewie wouldn't have to worry with that. Okay.
So that was what, 1981?
Yeah, no. That was May 1980. Now we move into May 1981, and I have a clip, if I can find it.
May 1981, this is Wave 4, the Empire Wave 2, right, Chris?
Yes, this would be the Empire Strikes Back Wave 2. And I want to play a clip, and then I want to read off the figures.
All right.
Yoda, AT-AT driver, 41 action figures from Kenner's Star Wars The Empire Strikes Back collection, each sold separately. You can send for this new action figure survival kit free with 5 proofs of purchase from any Empire Strikes Back action figures. 12 accessories like Hoth backpack that fits on action figures sold separately. Offer expires May 31st, 1981. Details on specially marked packages at participating stores. Yoda, AT-AT driver, and other action figures each sold separately from Kenner's Star Wars The Empire Strikes Back collection.
Okay, so 1981, they had the mail away for this survival kit, which was, to me was awesome and really cool, because you got a really cool belt with a grappling hook, like they used in Star Wars, and you got a couple of backpacks, you got some breathing masks, like they did with the Minock Hunt. And see, that was my kit that I ordered then, and didn't get it until 2 years later because of moving twice. But I finally did get it. But the figures that came with that, they answered my prayers. May 1981, you got Han Solo and Bespin outfit. Yes! Then we had the Imperial Commander, which is just basically an Imperial officer, AT-AT driver, Rebel Hoth commander, Princess Leia in her Hoth outfit, Lobot, 2-1B, Dengar, Ugnaught, and then Yoda. I always thought that was kind of weird. You know, in Wave 1, you got Hoth, Han, and Leia in her Bespin gown. Then Wave 2, you got Han and Bespin and Leia and her Hoth. I thought it was kind of interesting. Of course, in this particular wave, Han and Bespin, as usual, that's like my all-time favorite figure for some reason. And then Yoda. Yoda, to me, when that first came out, I'm almost positive that they released all of these figures except Yoda. Yoda, I think, wasn't ready when it first came out in May. I think it was a couple months later before Yoda finally hit, because in doing my research that at times they were actually shipping full cases of Yoda. So you were getting a case of 72 Yodas, because back then the cases were 72 figures to a case instead of 12 like they are nowadays. And it's like I was looking everywhere for Yoda, and then finally when he starts showing up, that's all you can find. So, I mean, I was one. I had to have all the figures, and I had all the figures. It was just that's what I spent my allowance on. That's what I asked for birthdays or Christmas. So usually within several months, probably the first 6 months, I would have all the figures from the line. So, you know, as far as me playing and everything, that's what I used to say would drive me nuts with the Han and Hoth. But I thought this second wave was really great. You got that survival kit, which was really cool, for May of 1981. And that was actually the only mail away in 1981. So, Matt, what do you think about this line?
The one that stood out like for me was obviously the Han, and then the AT-AT driver, the AT-AT driver. I had a few of those, and he was just one of those characters that, especially, and when we'll get to the speeder bikes and the biker scouts, that was another stormtrooper variation that I was drawn to from the beginning. I still love it to this day. Great design, and the AT-AT drivers, I love those too. And let's talk about the Yoda, the snake, that came with the Yoda. I mean, that's one of those things nowadays where if you can find a Yoda that still has the snake. And I believe, wasn't there something that had to do with the snake changing color too?
Yeah, they had a brown one and then an orange one. The main one was orange. Right. So brown is actually the rarer version. But yeah, mine was orange. Yeah. I always thought that was stupid. You know, as a kid, I was like, why is a snake orange?
Yeah, so that was, yeah, if you can find a figure that still has the snake, I mean, that's worth a lot of money. And and we also have to talk about too, Chris, we're still talking about the 12 back, right? As far as all these card backs?
No, the original 12, the first 12 was the only ones that were 12 back.
Those are okay. And then it got into
the second wave.
21.
Yeah, the second wave was 20 and 21 backs. You had two different versions because they released, before the Boba Fett, there was just the 20, and then they added the Boba Fett. And so each card back would add these other figures to it. So in this particular line, these were 41 backs and 42 backs, depending on ones that had Yoda or didn't have Yoda.
Right. And for those, like, if you're wondering, like, what the heck is he talking about? What's 12 back? What's 21 back? What's all this? It's just the back of the card had photos of the other figures. And that's where you get the.
Exactly. That's where we had our checklist and say, oh, you know, you'd sit there and mark off every figure so you knew, okay, I still needed that one. I still needed that one type of thing.
Right. So that's where that came from. I just wanted to mention that because that's often, hear that phrase when you hear about collecting.
Yeah, in the modern wave. Yeah. The modern era of figures, they might have that wave. You know, you might have six figures on the back or whatever. But in the old days, every figure that was released up to that point of that card was on the back of every single figure. That's just the way they always did it and the way they always were.
Okay. Yeah. So, Alex, you still there?
Yes.
Hey, so I know you got to run. Hey, thanks for coming on real quick here. We got some good insight into Star Wars, Rebels, the new book, A New Dawn. So appreciate you jumping on real quick. I know you got to go. So thanks for coming on, man.
Hey, thanks for having me. Just been hectic. I'm in the process of moving to Florida from North Carolina. So
yeah, no
just,
problem.
Just
no
been
problem.
Having a lot going on, but hopefully
hey, we'll get you back.
Settle down in the next couple of weeks or so once I get moved down there and everything. So.
Hey, no problem. No
All right,
problem.
Man. Thanks for coming.
Yeah.
Hey, thanks for having me and keep up the good work. I enjoy you guys.
All right, man. We'll talk to you later.
Bye.
All right. So, Chris, now we're on to, I think we're on, what is it, 82, Wave 5, Empire 3?
Yes, May 1982. In this particular wave, we had 9 figures, and we had actually 2 different mail-aways in 1982.
It's Star Wars The Empire Strikes Back action figures, 47 in all, each sold separately. Here's new Bespin Guard, AT-AT Commander, and Imperial TIE Fighter Pilot. Now you can get this new 4LOM action figure free for 5 proofs of purchase from any Star Wars action figures. Details on specially marked packages at participating stores. Offer expires August 31st, 1982. New Bespin Guard, new AT-AT Commander, new Imperial TIE Fighter Pilot, each sold separately. From Kenner Star Wars, The Empire Strikes Back Collection.
Okay, now this way we had 9 figures. You had R2-D2 with pop-up sensor scope. You had C-3PO with removable limbs, which is really cool. You can take his arms and legs off. Then the 4LOM and then the Suckus. So it was two, well, I can tell you in a second. TIE Fighter Pilot, Bespin Security Guard Black. We actually, in the first one, we did kind of a white Asian version, and then this one was a black version character. So it was nice of them to make the two different ones. Then you had Luke Skywalker, Hoth Battle Gear, AT-AT Commander, which was actually General Veers, Cloud Car Pilot, and then they had another mail-away, which was the display arena. It was just this little plastic pieces that you could get with cardboard backing that you can set up in different ways and play with your action figures. I never did. That's the one mail away order I didn't do was that one.
I didn't have that one either. No.
But these particular figures, now we had the four LOM as a mail away figure, and then you had Zuckus, which were actually the mail away figure was actually Zuckus and four LOM. They got the two names backwards.
Yeah, I remember
when they originally did it. So when you're looking for the vintage figures, if you're looking for 4LOM, you're actually looking for Zuckus and vice versa. But this particular wave was a really cool wave. I love the TIE Fighter pilot. I loved all of the Stormtrooper variations. The Luke Skywalker and Hoth Battle Gear was an awesome figure. That was such a cool-looking figure. At each wave that they did, the detailing of the figures got better and better as each wave went, which was so cool. The Cloud Car pilot was a really cool figure, even though you never even saw it in the film except like his helmet sitting in the cockpit. But it was a cool figure to have.
I definitely had that one. I had a few of those, actually, because I had a Cloud Car and you had to fill it up, so I had a few of those.
And that was the last wave for Empire Strikes Back.
Right.
And then we get ready to move it into Return of the Jedi in May of 1983, and we actually had two mail-away figures for this series, so I'm going to play this first one here. This is...
It's new Zuckus, 4LOM, an Imperial TIE Fighter pilot, 3 of 48 action figures from Star Wars, The Empire Strikes Back collection, each sold separately. And now, from Star Wars New Revenge of the Jedi collection, it's Admiral Ackbar, not yet available in any store, but free with 6 proofs of purchase from any Star Wars action figures. Details on specially marked packs at participating stores. Offer expires January 31st, 1983. New 4LOM, Zuckus, Imperial TIE Fighter pilot, and other action figures, each sold separately, from Kenner's Star Wars The Empire Strikes Back collection.
Okay, now this is, you can see it's a Revenge of the Jedi. This was actually put out before they changed the name back to Return of the Jedi.
Yeah, I was just going to mention that. Yep.
So it was really cool to have this figure, and I just remember thinking, damn, I got this figure, and we have no idea what it does because this is well before the movie came out. And when they finally did send out the movie, or the next wave of figures in May of 1983, we got these 17 figures. Luke Skywalker, Jedi Knight outfit, the Emperor's Royal Guard, which was really cool, Admiral Ackbar.
Nice figure. Yeah.
And I love how they put this on the card. It was Princess Leia in Boosh disguise. Yeah. They didn't just say Boosh. If you're looking at it, you're like, okay, that's Princess Leia. I don't get it. Then we had Ri-Yi's, one of the Jabba's characters, Weakway, Biker Scout, Rebel Commando, Klaatu, Squidhead, Gamorrean Guard, Lando Calrissian in Skiff Guard disguise, General Maydeen, Bib Fortuna, Low Gray, Ewok Medicine Man, Chief Chirpa, another Ewok, and Ni Num. And the second mail away for that year, let me find it.
It's Darth Vader, Lando Calrissian, and 4LOM from Kenner's Star Wars Return of the Jedi collection. Part of the Star Wars collection of 48 action figures, each sold separately. Now there's a brand new action figure not yet available in stores. It's Ni Num. You can get Ni Num free with 5 proofs of purchase from any Star Wars action figures. Details on specially marked packages. Offer expires June 15th, 1983. Darth Vader, Lando Calrissian, 4LOM, and other action figures, each sold separately from Kenner's Star Wars Return of the Jedi collection.
Okay. Now that was... I didn't really remember it being that way as a kid, but we got the Admiral Ackbar mail away before the movie ever came out, before we saw any figures. And then once this wave was starting to hit, we had the Ni Num, and then, of course, it was carded. But to me, these figures were so detailed. I mean, it was just like a huge leap from the last wave, having Luke with his Jedi cloak and so many great figures, 17 figures to start with. The Biker Scout was so cool because then, of course, you had the speeder bike that came out with along at the same time, so you got to and all these great Jabba's characters with Klaatu, Squidhead, and I thought Lando in his skip guard disguise was so cool with the removable helmet and stuff, and the Leia in her Boosh disguise with removable helmet. I mean, it's just a great line. And one thing that was very interesting is that George Lucas did not want the secret of the Ewok to be let out, because in all the trailers, you really didn't see the Ewoks. And then when the figures were first on this first wave, we had two of the Ewoks. Well, when you flipped it over to the back of the card, they had those two characters blacked out, so you couldn't see them. But the silly thing was, is you could go to a store and buy a low gray and then flip it over, and it'd be blacked out on the back. So it was really kind of strange.
Good insight, yeah.
Yeah, and he was just trying to keep the...
keep the secret, huh?
Yeah, keep the secret. I thought it was strange, but... What was it like for you with these?
This was definitely like one of the standout waves and the biggest wave as well. And just like you heard in that last Empire wave and this new Jedi wave, you hear some funny stuff where you hear he says 4LOM, and a lot of people tend to say just 4LOM.
Yeah.
And of course, like you mentioned, Chris, earlier, the revenge thing, and this is well before they had changed the title. So you got a commercial talking about Revenge of the Jedi, which was kind of cool. Nice little nostalgic moment there. But the standouts for me on this was, the Gamorrean Guard. I tell you what, I've picked up some of the new ones that came out on this new Vintage line that came out just a few years ago, but just love the guards, man. They're just a fun character. I remember having a few of those. And then,
Of course, one of my favorites.
Of course, the Luke Skywalker and the Emperor's Royal Guard, really great looking figures for that time. I never got any of the mail-aways, and I don't know why I didn't. I guess it was just too much. It was just like I couldn't wait, right? Like, you're talking back in the days. This is before like Amazon, where you get stuff in a day or two. You know, this was you were waiting a long time. You know,
yeah,
long time.
It says 6 to 8 weeks, and you know, yeah,
yeah. If you're lucky, 6 to 8. You know, you're talking months and months. You're waiting. I couldn't fathom waiting that long. So I kind of tended to stay away from the mail stuff, but definitely the Lukes and the Empires or the Royal Guards, great stuff. Rebel Commando, Biker Scout, of course, which I talked about earlier. Just that design. I had a bunch of those, and one of my favorite designs was the Biker Scout. I love the way the helmet had the visor type thing going on it. So. That's the kind of standouts of that particular wave for me.
And I was going to say, as we move into May of 1984, we had two different mailaways for this. We have this particular figure. I'm going to go ahead and play it right quick.
Star Wars Return of the Jedi is here. From it, Kenner brings you 65 incredible Star Wars action figures, each sold separately. And now Kenner reveals yet another from the dark side of the Force, the Supreme Master, the Emperor, and he's yours free just by sending 5 proofs of purchase from any Star Wars action figures to Return of the Jedi, Box 596, Young America, Minnesota. But hurry, this offer will end.
Nice. This particular wave, we had 14 characters, and this one was a little different the way they did this one. We had, of course, Emperor, the mail away, and then it was also carded later. Wicket, action figure, Rancor Keeper, Princess Leia in her combat poncho, 8D8, which was one of the Jabba's droids that was in the dungeon, Han Solo trench coat, Ewok Tebow, AT-ST driver, Prune Face, which, as growing up, I never knew where that character was, and it was years and years before I realized, oh, he was in the Rebel briefing room in Return of the Jedi when they go back to their rendezvous point. Mm-hmm. Then we had Nikto, and then Klaatu in Skip Guard outfit. And then these were all released first in May, and then a month later, they added 2 more figures to the line, which was 2 more Ewoks, Paplu and Lumat. Mm-hmm. And because you could see in the anytime we got a toy, like say Jabba's Palace or a vehicle, it came with a little booklet that showed all the different toys, and they had this wave without those 2 figures, and then later on down they had the wave with these 2 in it. So they just, I don't know, they just showed up a couple of months later. I don't know, maybe they weren't ready at the time, but who knows.
Right.
And then we also had another mail away, which was simply just a poster. You would send in your proof of purchase. You know, the odd thing was, on any of these mail aways, it didn't cost anything. You sent in the 5 proof of purchase or however many proof of purchase for the figures, and that was it. But when we had that display stand, the very first one, and then this particular poster, you had to send in proof of purchase plus $2. For the poster, which was kind of strange. It was a cool poster. I still got it. It's on my wall now. One side of it, it's where they coined the phrase, Star Wars is forever. You had all the characters from Return of the Jedi, the main characters in that, and then you flipped it over, and you had all of the action figures in this huge scene on the back, and then it had trivia questions at the bottom for the action figures, which to me was really cool.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, this particular wave ended up with 14 characters, and what stood out for you on this particular wave?
Yeah. Well, as you can hear in that particular audio segment, by this time, they had finally changed the name. So they were saying actually Return of the Jedi. So, but yeah, Wicket was one of the ones that I got real early on. It was probably the first one I got out of this wave. And then I, let's see, then Han Solo. I remember getting Han Solo because I had that trench coat. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as funny as it was, I wasn't big into the Leia characters. You know, as a kid, you're just like, oh, I just want all the cool, you know, I just want all the cool characters like Han, and I want all the dudes, right? Because you're a guy, you're a kid, you're a young boy. You're like, oh, I don't want, what am I going to do with a princess? I can't play with a princess, you know? And this was like the first time I actually got the Leia, you know? It's just like, and the other one too was when she was in the Bush outfit.
Yeah.
Because you can remove the helmet. And I remember doing that all the time. But those were the first two actual female characters that I got. The first one was the Bush, and then this one right here, the combat pouch of the Leia. Because like I said, you know, as a young boy, you kind of shied away from, at least I did. I shied away from all like the female characters. I just wanted all the cool characters, like, which I thought were all the Hans. And
not
the,
me. I had to have it. If it was part of the line, I had to have them. So, yeah.
Yeah. So, and then, of course, I had a couple of the AT-ST drivers.
Oh, yeah.
And, they were cool. Yeah. And then the B-Wing pilot, I got that one too.
I mean, you know.
A couple of them I didn't get, though. I didn't get any. I never had the Nick 2. I didn't have Tebow. I didn't get that one, or the AT-8. So, there was a lot of characters that I didn't get. Cause it was one of those things as a kid, you know, and growing up in a house where you didn't have, you know, you just couldn't say, hey, mom, I want this, and she'd go out and buy it. You know, we didn't have the money.
So
you had to be selective on what you wanted. So you got, you know, just the cool characters you thought were the best. So
yeah. And you know, when Star Wars first started out, the original 12, they were like 99 cents. Mm-hmm. Now when we got to this wave, May of 1984, they were like $3.99.
Right.
They were, you know,
right,
up to $2.99, $3.99. So yeah, they were more expensive. And I remember I had all of them to this way. And of course, you know, I was 14 years old. And at this point, I wasn't playing really with anything. I was just still collecting the figures because I had all the other ones and I just loved them so much. I just wanted these figures. I mean, I played a little bit, but nothing like I did when I was a kid. And you know, at 14, you're kind of, okay, you're more outside doing things and stuff, I guess, as opposed to sitting in your room and playing, or even in your backyard and playing. But so I had all of the figures. I mean, I had to have them. And then Star Wars really kind of started as far as toys dying out in 1985. And then the final wave, May of 1985, they had one mail away figure, which I don't have audio clip for it. And that was for Anakin Skywalker, which was the Force ghost at the end of Return of the Jedi when you see the old Anakin Skywalker, and that one, you got that one. And that one's really, really rare as far as getting it on the card because it wasn't readily available like the other ones. This was the Power of the Force line, the original Power of the Force, and it came with a coin. So these figures here, it came out at a bad time when it was dying out, and we had 15 figures on this wave. You had Han Solo. And this is one that actually they went back and made some characters from Star Wars, the first movie, whereas all the other waves were strictly the movie that were coming out. Han Solo and Carbonite. Yeah. Then you had Imperial Gunner, which was from Star Wars. Lando in his general outfit. Amana Man, which from Jabba's Palace. EB-99, the other droid in the torture chamber. The Anakin Skywalker. And then you had Barada, which was one of the skip guard people. Rombe and Warrock, or the two last Ewoks. Then you had R2-D2 with his pop-up lightsaber. You had an Imperial Dignitary, which was kind of like, why? But anyway, then you had A-Wing Pilot. Then you had Luke Skywalker in his battle poncho from Jedi. And then you had Luke Skywalker in his Stormtrooper outfits, which was really cool. And then Yak Face. Yak Face wasn't released in the U.S. on a card. It was released, I think, in Canada, I think is what it ended up with. So that one's kind of hard to find as an actual on the card. That one and the Anakin Skywalker are the two really rare figures to find from that wave. All of these figures carded from this wave is very expensive for the simple fact it was the wave dying out. And I remember I only had a couple of them. I had the Lando. I picked that one up, and I picked up, you know, a couple others, and that was it. By then, I was kind of done with it. But I still had everything up into that wave. And this was another great wave. It's just that,
Being
15 at this time, it's kind of like, okay, I'd go in and bought a couple of them, and I'm like thinking, why am I buying them? I'm not playing with them anymore. So, you know.
Yeah. And that's what, you know, what's funny is that's what we did. Like we didn't, of course, we didn't think of it as, collecting, and that's why, you know, that I have so many figures that are probably still laying in somewhere in boxes, like in my mom's house, that I have to go through, because we opened every single one. We never thought about putting them, keeping me in a card or anything like that. I mean, we messed with them. We like I said earlier, you know, I took these things outside and put them in their vehicles, and I kind of mixed them with G.I. Joes, and I remember throwing firecrackers in them and making them blow up and stuff like that. I mean, just crazy stuff like that. We never thought in a million years to save these things like we do now. But this is, like I said, this wave three that you were talking about here, this last wave, the Jedi wave in 85. Again, this is where you start, like you said, 15, you're starting to get out of it and other things are going on and you just kind of don't have time for that anymore. But do remember the Han Solo and the Carbonite, of course, the Lando, and of course the Skywalkers definitely had those, and the R2 as well. And this is at the time too, Chris, like you said, the first time where we saw this repeat, going back and repacking, if you want to call it that, or not repacking, but
going back kinda, and pulling figures from the earlier movie, and yet they never did a Tarkin.
Common now. Yeah.
To me, that was the one figure I never understood why they never made Grand Moff Tarkin.
That's
the one figure. And they did all of the various stormtroopers except for the sand trooper. I guess they figured, well, stormtrooper is the same as a sand trooper. It's just got, you know, pauldron and a backpack. Well, no, it's not. It's different, but, you know.
Right.
I mean, and you, each wave, like, when you get to Return of the Jedi, you could still go buy the Star Wars Han Solo, but he'll be on Return of the Jedi card. I mean, every figure that they put out, each wave, all the other figures were still being made. So those figures that first came out in 1978, you could still go in a store in 1984 and 85 and buy those figures, which was made it so great. And to me, they had that great ploy of collect all 72 or whatever. That was their catchphrase. Whatever figures you heard on every one of these on the commercials that I played, collect all 48. You know, they made it as like, you have to have all of them, collect all of them. And as a kid, it worked on me. I mean, I had to have all of them. And now, I wasn't one that went and blew mine up with firecrackers or damaged mine, but I go out and play with them. But at the end of the day, I had my Darth Vader collector's case that I had my figures in. You know, I had the vinyl case that first came out, the little 24. I had a couple of those, but then when the Darth Vader case came out, I had like three of those to hold all my figures. At the end of the day, I took inventory. I made sure I had all my figures and they were put away and I didn't lose any of them. So I was kind of anal about that. So you couldn't go out in the yard and find none in my yard because I made sure I had all of them, you know, together when I was done playing.
So that was it, man. That's the waves. And Kenner, man, I tell you what, they hooked up. So whoever made that decision, wow, they should have got a huge raise because the millions of dollars, millions, I'm talking hundreds of millions of dollars that they made just in 1979 alone, just in 79 sales were over, topped $100 million. And you're talking about in 79, and this is a long time ago, and sales of these figures topped $100 million. And that's not even including the waves until 84. And then in 85 when they started renaming it Power of the Force. So,
yeah, and they said in that original run, they made over 1 billion action figures. Now think about that, a billion action figures. And look at how much they're worth now. So that tells you kids play with them.
Yeah. Yeah, like I said, 1 billion of them. And just, you know, like you said, you just didn't know back then what you were sitting on. And I think we've talked to some people that, one of the guests we had a while back said that I remember their mom buying him a figure and she would always buy another one.
Yes.
To keep in a box, and it's holy crap. Talk about, I mean, that's just.
It gave it to him when he grew up. I'd be like,
these original Kenner things. If you have any around, I mean, you know what they are. I mean, they're just the classic. I mean, it's nostalgic. It's they're worth a ton of money, even out of the package. It doesn't matter. You know, you just have these things, and they're like little pieces of gold, man. So. Hang on to those if you have those. Hang on to them. And if you're like me, start digging in your parents' attics and basements and look for these things if you think you have some around. Yeah. So that's it, man. That's our
fill up the backyard.
Yeah. Hey, yeah, there you go. Yeah, definitely do that. Start digging, see what you can find. That's our look, folks, at the Kenner Star Wars action figures back in the day, man, back in the 70s and early 80s.
Yeah, and I know there'll be a lot of you that are younger and don't know quite much about it. You might be learning something from us. But then others, like us, it'd just be like a walk down memory lane.
Yeah, no, actually, I learned a lot, too. I just researched this and just hearing what you had to say. And just, yeah, brings back a lot of memories and some things I didn't even realize. Was good stuff, man, good stuff. Hey, we got to talk about just if you want to get in touch with us, man, where people can find us.
On Facebook, it's facebook.com/ you can go Sarlacc Pit Podcast. Contact us there. We'll get back to you as soon as we can. Probably not that day, but you know, as soon as we get it and we can, we will. Also, our main page is on Facebook. Also, Classic Star Wars, Star Wars Now, which is really gaining some steam on that page.
Yeah.
And that's basically just anything and everything coming out in Star Wars as it's coming. We try to post about it and relay that to people so that, you know, they know it's coming, vice versa. And Twitter, our main contact on Twitter is at Classic Star Wars. That's the one I manage every single day, and I'm on there, and it's a great page to follow. And we're almost up to 7,000 followers on that page, so we're getting there. But all in all, we'll have a lot of fun with it. So, and you can also email us at podcast@galacticfinder.com if you have any questions, or if you'd like to come on and join us, shoot us an email. We can get in touch and we can see about getting you on, and you can join us and sit down and talk some Star Wars with us.
Yeah, that's definitely a big thing right there is we've always talked about being with you guys, and we want to have you guys on. That's why we started, because we listen to podcasts and we wanted to chime in and give our own thoughts, and we want to give you guys the opportunity to do that on this podcast. So if there's anything you want to talk about, don't hesitate to let us know, and all you need is a mic and Skype and some Star Wars love, man. We'll have you on and do that. So, yeah, don't forget to hit all those pages. Contact us if you want. We thank you all for giving us some reviews on iTunes. You guys know who you are. And like I said, just contact us and let us know what's going on. And whether it's the podcast, whether it's the email, whether it's the Facebook pages, whatever you want, man, let us know. We'll chat and maybe get you on the show. So with that, we will finish it up. And big thanks to Alex for coming on. I'm sure we'll have him back and when he has more time, and we can get into some of the stuff that he's got going on that he was involved in. But we thank all you guys for hanging with us and making us part of your Star Wars day. For Alex and Chris, my name is Matt. We will see you guys next time in the Sarlacc Pit.
Awesome.
Cool stuff. Kenner.
Thank you for joining us on the Sarlacc Pit, the official podcast of GalacticBinder.com and YodasNews.com. Star Wars, its logo, and all things in the Star Wars universe are the property of Lucasfilm Limited. All rights reserved. All original content within this podcast, unless otherwise indicated, is the intellectual property of GalacticBinder.com and YodasNews.com.